Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, welcome to Sparty Talk, everyone. The farewell to Anastas edition. I felt like I needed a dramatic pause. Satchmo here, coming to you from an undisclosed location just outside of the D, and joining me from the nation's capital, the one, the only, the thin man, DB. Greetings, DB.
Greetings and salutations on this interesting day in Spartan hockey.
It is an interesting day. Today, we have two topics on tap. One expected, Michigan State's exit from the second round at the hands of Kansas in the NCAA basketball tournament. One sort of expected, but the timing we weren't sure of, and that's where we'll begin. We'll begin with breaking news. If you haven't heard, Spartan hockey coach Tom Anastas has resigned. He has stepped down. He's no longer the head of the Michigan State hockey program. Final record for Tom Anastas, 78-122-24 in six seasons. Ouch. Oh. If you're wondering why Tom Anastas is no longer the hockey coach, it's the 122 number. And it's because it's way bigger than the 78 number.
Today's math lesson.
Put those math skills to use. Look, even if you wanted to, DB, turn the 24 ties into wins, right? Then you're at 100, 102, and 22. Which is still a lot lower. It's on the wrong side of the ledger after 6 years.
Absolutely, so, on the wrong side, yeah.
Yes, absolutely on the wrong side. So Tom Anastas, gone. And, look, we cited the main reason, right, which is the record. But the bottom line is, in addition to the record, DB, this Spartan hockey program wasn't showing progress. You could almost say, all right, the record's terrible, but we know this is a long turnaround period for hockey. There wasn't much talent coming in. Talent's starting to flow into the program. Let's wait and see. You could almost be understandable, except there's no progress on the ice. And that record combined with just lackluster play on the ice, you'd see 15 to 20 minutes of good play and 40 minutes of really bad play. And I think it's that combination that ultimately ended up with Anastas no longer being in East Lansing, DB.
Yeah, totally agree. And, you know, Tom Anastas, Satchwell, and we can go back and you, Spartan Nation can go back and listen to our podcast from about this time of the year back in March of 2011. We were sort of hemming and hawing at this fire. Tom Anastas came into this program with very little coaching experience. He coached the club team at U of M Dearborn, I believe, a long time ago. Predominantly, he was a commissioner of the CCHA and the North American Hockey League. That's why he just didn't have the coaching experience at any level, much less college. And it's tough to just jump in and say you're going to turn a program around, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's tough to jump in. I'm not opposed to out-of-the-box hires, right? Because sometimes you need to step out of the box and try and do some things differently. And to be fair to Tom Anastas did bring a skill set to Michigan State that was sorely needed. He brought tremendous organization. He brought fundraising skill set, administrative skill set that frankly got the job done in terms of renovating Munn. And realistically, and this is something that should have happened, right? Munn should have been, I mean, they should have gone for the more expensive plan. They went for the easy way out and renovated instead of entirely replacing it. And that's not Anastas' fault. But he brought a unique skill set with him that enabled many of those things to happen. And it seemed like, at least for a few years, that he was making inroads because hockey recruiting is nuts. It's like a 5 or 6 year process, right? So the guys you start recruiting don't show up on campus till 4 or 5 years later, at which point the coach is hanging by a thread, and it's really difficult. And it looks like, on paper at least, and we know that recruiting isn't done on paper, better talent is coming into the Michigan State pipeline and better players are arriving. But unfortunately, the results just aren't there on the ice. And so the potential isn't being met. And so, yeah, I think he was an out-of-the-box hire. He brought some good skill sets to East Lansing. I'm not opposed to out-of-the-box hires. This one didn't work. And that shouldn't make Mark Hollis gun-shy from other out-of-the-box hires. I mean, sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. Look, Buck Showalter turns out to be a really good manager. You want to know what? When he was hired from the booth to go be a manager, everyone's like, well, what are we doing with Buck Showalter here? Why is he coming to manage? So these things can work, DB, but this one didn't. And this one didn't because the product on the ice wasn't good enough. And maybe that's because the talent wasn't good enough. Maybe that's because Anastas didn't surround himself with the right assistants. Whatever it is, the ultimate responsibility side is with Anastas, and he stepped down. Are you surprised he stepped down instead of being fired, DB?
A little. I thought, actually, and I was telling you offline, I thought he might even get one more year because I think he had a year left on his contract, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I thought about that. I actually thought that Michigan State was going to wait until after the NCAA hockey tournament to let him go, because that's what I would have done. And I would have done that for two reasons. One, you make the assumption that one of the coaches that they're at least interviewing or interested in interviewing would be a coach in the NCAA tournament or an assistant in the NCAA tournament. And so there's no sense in letting Anastas go now and having to wait a couple weeks to interview this candidate. So that's the first sense. The second sense is you get the sense that the Spartan Hockey Administration, Mark Hollis and the powers that be, and actually the university at large, has zero interest in talking to the media right now and facing questions from the media and dealing with all of this, because they know the moment they put their head out and say, hey, this is what we're doing, they're going to get fired with at questions not just about hockey but about several other issues. And so they wanted to avoid that. And the news was released in a statement, and there hasn't been any official press availability as far as I can tell. In the statement, Tom's an amazing person, Hollis said. The unfortunate part is wins and losses matter to a lot of people. I think Tom put out a top nine that just didn't meet expectations. And so that's what Mark said in his statement. And so you've got that. And so, yeah, I was expecting a different timeline. Tom Newton is going to be the interim coach. There's expected to be a quote-unquote national search, and there's no successor lined up nor a timeline for a hire. One of the things, DB, that we do know for sure is Mark Hollis is thorough in his searches, and it will take time. It won't be an instant hire. And that's another reason why I thought he would wait a little bit before making this decision.
Yeah, and it's okay if Mark Hollis takes his time. I would not want Mark Hollis to make a rush decision. He shouldn't, certainly. There are a lot of rumors out there, of course, and you can only know what's really coming from MSU channels. May I share, Satchmo, the short list of four that was put out this afternoon by Michigan Hockey Magazine?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So earlier this afternoon, Mike Capel, the editor of Michigan Hockey Now Online, revealed a list of four potential candidates that Michigan State might be looking at. Again, this is all speculation. They all have connections back to Ron Mason, interestingly. Real quick, one is Dan Cole, former player under Ron back in the late 80s, early 90s, and has been a head coach for quite some time, both in the NHL minor league level, the college level at Alabama Huntsville, and also with the U.S. National Development Team in Ann Arbor. So he's familiar with the recruits and has a lot of experience and a former Spartan. Quick thoughts on him?
Yeah, before we get into the other one, I just want to say it's a baseline that connections back to Michigan State, to me, are overrated. We should be out there looking for the best hockey coach, period. That's the first and foremost. The second, I think, basic qualification is you're looking for someone that understands how modern hockey is played, which is a lot of speed on the ice, speed through the neutral zone, speed in the offensive zone, defensemen that can move the puck, and skilled defensemen that can trigger the breakout and man the power play. Right? This is the way modern hockey is played. You take a look at all the really good hockey teams, what do they have in common? They've got speed, and they've got skilled defensemen. And so those are your two baselines. Do they understand how modern hockey is played? All right, that's your first baseline. If the answer is yes, the second answer is, all right, what value do they present to recruits? Can they connect with recruits? All right, that's the second, because it's talent. So you got to bring the talent. Do they understand how the game is played? Do they have the talent? And third, are they capable of developing players, taking that talent and putting a product out in the ice? So those are your three basic considerations. But once you meet those considerations, then everything else is golden. So that's what Michigan State has to be on the lookout for. And then the final sort of bit of this is you're looking for someone that has a connection to pro hockey, because all these kids, the top talents, they all want to go to the pros. And can you generate pros? So those are your four baseline considerations. And as long as you're meeting those considerations, you're doing all right. So if you take a look at someone like Danton Cole, Dan Cole meets a couple of those things. He meets the recruiting consideration. He knows the recruits. He's going to be able to recruit talent. That's what he does. He brings talent into the U.S. National Development Team, right? He is a good hockey coach. He's known for being a good hockey coach. He's able to translate that talent into production on the ice, right? So we know he can do those two things. Reasonably good hire. Does he check off the other boxes? Maybe, maybe not, but he checks off at least two of them, and because of the recruiting connection, I think he's worth considering.
The others, real fast, two former players with a little less experience, but certainly Chris Luongo, former Spartan with the U.S., also an assistant coach on the USA Hockey development program. Damon Witten, who used to play for Ron in the late 90s, early 2000s, before Ron retired and moved into the athletic director chair. Witten is the head coach now at Lake Superior, not the most stellar record. Younger guy, Witten, but you know, he certainly has his eye on the game and is in the game right now. And finally, a longtime coach with a lot of success, George Gwozdecki, who was the head coach of Denver for many years, won a few national championships with them, and was a Spartan assistant way back in the day. And just one point that I'll agree with completely, this is a short list. So they are connected to the Spartans program in one way or another, but I agree with you, Sachmo, it does not have to be necessarily someone connected with MSU at all. I think it's time to open our eyes wide all over the place.
Yeah, and look, Gwoz is an interesting choice, right? Because Gwoz, we know, is a proven commodity. He's an excellent coach. He's out coaching high school right now, so he's a little bit out of touch with the collegiate game. But he's really good. And so that's always a possibility. So you've got to like Gwoz. Are there any pros, DB, that you sit out there and think, wow, it would be nice to get a coach from the pros and bring him back to Michigan State?
Well, yeah. So, you know, there's plenty of people. I throw out a couple names here. I mean, one's already locked up, and he's got one of the best teams in the NHL. We've talked about this a million times, Satchmo. But if he gets fired this spring, Bruce Boudreau is one of our favorite NHL choices to coach. He's great with young players. He has the Minnesota Wild playing unbelievable hockey this year. Satchmo. I love him. The other one that I think he can coach college team pretty well, even though he hasn't had success in the pros, is I think probably soon to be ex-Red Wing coach Jeff Blashill. I don't think he's going to last as the head coach of the Wings, but I think he could coach a college team. He's done it before.
Yeah, well, Blashill's a good hockey coach, and he had a lot of success in Grand Rapids, which is sort of along the similar level. I think he would be a good recruiter, and I think
he
would be okay.
He coached at Western. He coached at Western before Andy Murray took over and built them up. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and built them up. Although it's going to take a while for the Red Wings stink to rub off the resume there. Boudreau would be like the dream get, right? And here's Hollis's pitch to Boudreau. He's like, look, we can't give you the money. We can't give you the Stanley Cup. What we can give you is job solidity, right? We can give you a stable, solid job, job stability, and then we'll give you the keys to the castle. Say, go build the greatest hockey program known to man and have at it because we believe in you. And he will attack it with vim and vigor. He would get talent in the door because they want to know the Bruce Boudreau way of playing hockey to go to the NHL. We get great hockey product on the ice, and we would win, and Bruce Boudreau wouldn't have to live out of a suitcase anymore. And I think all of that is worth it. And now whether Boudreau is actually interested in that is another matter. But I think Michigan State has the pitch to make to somebody like Boudreau or someone of his ilk, and I think they should absolutely think about doing it. It would be a shame not.
Yeah, I mean, that's an out-of-the-box hire that could really be exciting, somebody like that. So as this continues to unfold, and we'll see how it goes, it's going to be exciting. It's nice to be sort of thinking ahead of Spartan hockey rather than, you know, the last few years, Satchmo, we've been so down about MSU hockey.
Yeah, and I'm going to throw out one other name before we move on to hoops real quick, is the concept of Ken Hitchcock. Bringing in a couple of young assistants that he's going to groom, and one of them sort of takes over the program. And
interesting.
I think that
I would love that. I would love that. That would be like a sort of Andy Murray type of hire. Hitchcock's in his 60s. You know, he's here for 6-7 years. Surrounds himself with young assistants. I love that. That would be great.
Yeah, that would be great because Hitchcock is a great teacher of the game. He has everything that recruits want to be able to do, but he's going to leave the heavy lifting, the heavy recruiting to a couple of young, energetic assistants, both of whom are in sort of a Lord of the Flies fashion, fighting to become a successor. I kind of like that. So we'll do that. But you're right, DB. This is fantastic to be thinking about a positive future for Michigan State hockey, instead of waiting for the guillotine to drop. And look, I like Tom Anastas. I feel bad for him. I wish him well. Hopefully this is the move or the first step in a series of moves to turn around Michigan State hockey.
Agreed.
All right. Shifting gears to hoops. DB, Michigan State.
Yeah.
Looked good in the first round. Beating the U. Then they ran up against Kansas. And they looked good for 35 minutes.
Yeah.
And then they just ran out of gas. They didn't have enough healthy bodies to go around, DB. I mean, that's just the bottom line. They ran out of gas. I think if Aaron Harris plays, this is a different ballgame. If Gavin Schilling plays, this is a different ball game. But the Aaron Harris injury in particular really came back to bite Michigan State in this game. And they struggled. They ran out of gas. Kansas kicked it into a gear that Michigan State doesn't have right now. But for 35 minutes, this was a great ball game. And then they just couldn't keep up. And as you look at the end of the season and you look at how well Michigan State played, in the NCAA tournament, I don't have this sense of sadness, DB. I sort of have this sense of,
wow, the future is bright for Michigan State basketball.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't have any sadness towards losing this game. I'm glad if the Spartans had to lose in a game against someone in the NCAA tournament. It's probably one of the best teams, one of the most complete teams of the number one seeds, I think. And I love the way they played against Miami after the first old Spartan tournament basketball against Miami. That was defense. They were getting at it. They were rebounding. It was one of their best games all year, I thought, when they played Miami. And they played Kansas.
Well, except
really
for the
well.
First 5 minutes. The first, actually, the first 5-10 minutes were terrible, right?
Yeah, the first 5-10 minutes were terrible. But they played Kansas real close. They were undermanned, and they played Kansas real close, and they scared Kansas for the first 35 minutes.
Yeah, and then they just ran out of gas.
Mm-hmm.
And
ran out of gas.
That's
exactly right.
And the reason why I say Aaron Harris would have made a difference is Aaron Harris defensively could have taken on a lot of that defensive responsibility against the guards, right? And then you wouldn't have had to have Tum-Tum there in the game as much. So you could have played Cassius Winston, you could have played Harris, you could have played Langford. Then you go across the front line and you got Ward, Bridges, and Ellis. Right, and Ellis serving sort of as an undersized player out there. But then you've got really a squad that can shoot and defend with the exception of Winston. And you hide Winston against someone, and they hit him in the defense, right? They had him guarding a spot-up shooter. And so they really hit Winston out there, but they needed his offense. But then now it's a fair fight because defensively you've got someone that can go up against Mason. And look, McQuaid did a good job against Mason. Ellis took his turn against Mason. There were a lot of people that had the shot, but Harris was their best defender, and he was a lockdown defender. And they were just that one player away. And then Harris on offense gives you that ability to get to the rim, another outside shooter to provide some floor spacing, some senior leadership on the court, all of those sorts of things. I'm not saying Michigan State wins this game, but I think this game goes down to the wire with Harris in there.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm totally willing to agree with that. I will say this: if you have Harris, you have Schilling, and you have Carter, not only are you maybe a 2 or 3 seed or higher, but I'll give you against anybody in this tournament that Spartan team would have won for sure.
Yes, that's true. Agreed.
Yeah.
All right, so let's quickly take a look at who's departing. Alvin Ellis, Matt Van Dyke, Aaron Harris, those three are gone for sure. Maybe gone, Ben Carter, likely gone, Ben Carter. He's applying for a medical redshirt, sort of an emergency one. They don't know whether he's going to be granted an exception. All right, so that's who's definitely gone. All right, in the maybe gone category, Miles Bridges. And here's the interesting thing I thought. Tom Izzo saying this is that he said, look, Bridges' debt to Michigan State has been paid. It's over, right? Now it's up to him to do whatever he wants. And Izzo said, look, if he's going to be a lottery pick, it's my job to nudge him and say, go into the lottery and get the money. And he said, if he's not, it's my job to tell him that he's not. And that's what he's going to do. Bridges, for his part, said he's going to talk to his mom and he's going to talk to his coaches, and after he does that, he's going to make the decision that's right for him. Bridges is interesting and very different than Deontay Davis in that I think Bridges has really enjoyed his time at Michigan State and really enjoys being a college player and isn't necessarily in a rush to become an NBA player. But he also knows that this is a business and there's a lot of money out there and he's got to weigh his financial considerations. And so I think he's going to go pro, but I don't think it's 100% given that he's gone, DP.
Yeah, I don't either. You know, time will tell on that. We say this all the time, but any kid that has a chance at the NBA and knows they could be a lock in that first round, I mean, you can't refuse that. And, you know, I look at this as a win-win for the Spartan basketball. If Bridges stays, you have one heck of a possible national contender next year. If he leaves Satchmo, I look at this as a great recruiting tool for Tom Izzo because I think Miles Bridges is going to play in the NBA. He could be like a Draymond Green or a Zach Randolph kind of guy, that Tom Izzo can point to future recruits and say, this is what I produce here at Michigan State. And so
yeah.
I think it's a win-win for the program either way.
I agree with that. And by the way, people forget that Gary Harris plays in the NBA and is doing all right there too. Yeah, and so another good poster for Michigan State and Tom Izzo. I agree with that. Look, there are arguments to be made for Bridges to stay just from a basketball standpoint. He needs to get better off the dribble. He needs to get better at finishing. He needs to work on sort of imposing his will on the game. A lot of times he had amazing numbers, but you felt like he wasn't even on the court, and you just wanted him to take over. And so there are definitely things he needs to work on, his low post game. I mean, there are a lot of things that he does need to work on, and he could benefit from an extra year in school. That said, he can work on a lot of those things in the gym and just get better. And
yeah, no,
if you're
I
an
agree.
NBA player, you're in the gym.
Yeah,
and so there's a case to be – yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say he can also – well, I don't want to rain on your parade. I know what you're saying. I think he can also work on that in the NBA Development League too.
Oh, absolutely. He can work on that in the gym. He can do it at NBDL. There's a lot of places he can do it. It doesn't have to be at Michigan State. It definitely doesn't. So this is going to be an interesting decision. But, DB, I'm with you. If Bridges stays, they are a national championship contender. Because you want to know what they have coming in next year? They have reinforcements, baby. Size.
Yep.
Jared Jackson.
Size, yeah.
Six
size is coming. Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Xavier Tillman.
And Schilling.
6'8".
Schilling should be back.
And
helpful.
Schilling
yes,
back.
Size. Yeah. Yep.
Oh, how
yep.
cool would that be? All of a sudden, didn't have bigs. Kenny Goins can go back to being like a reserve power forward or a reserve small forward and like playing 10 minutes a game. This is what we're talking about. This is huge.
Yeah, no, it's exciting either way. It's a good recruiting chip, or it's a you'll see the Spartans in the top three, or if not higher, in the recruiting rankings in the polls next fall.
Yeah, because the assumption has to be, and it's a reasonable assumption, that Winston, Langford, and Ward are going to take huge steps forward next year. They took huge step forwards this season. Langford is going to be a fantastic player when it's all said and done at Michigan State. I mean, he is going to be truly tremendous. And so when you take a look at those three and the improvements they're going to make this offseason and this summer going into next year, and then you take a look at the incoming folks and you take a look at Gavin Schilling possibly coming back, it's going to be a pretty good team regardless, but Bridges would be the piece that puts it over the top.
Oh, absolutely. But even if not, you know, so many things change with college basketball. Look at this tournament this year. Anybody can win on any given night. There's been so many crazy games and upsets. Even a team without Miles Bridges still next year still has a reasonable shot to make some noise.
We've got just a couple of minutes left here. Let's touch on the tournament. What have you thought about the tournament this year? You liked it, didn't like it, impressed, bored? What's going on?
Interesting games. That region with Villanova and Duke is torn apart, and I think the Badgers, that tournament experience that they have from the past, and those seniors like Nigel Davis, you know, they come out of there, they look like the favorite in that region.
Yeah, I don't. Florida's really good, right? I think they're going to end up playing Florida. If they can beat that Florida team, I think they go to the Final Four. I was impressed with that. I'm impressed. I hate to say it, with Michigan. Michigan's played fantastic basketball.
Oh,
and
look, I don't like Michigan, but you know, I fully believe they can beat Oregon, and they're going to give Kansas a run for their money. I was talking to somebody today. I think Michigan has to score up near 80. To beat Kansas, or and maybe if Michigan forces overtime with Kansas, watch out. I think Michigan will be in the Final Four.
And don't count Purdue out against Kansas. Kansas hasn't played anybody like Biggie.
No.
And by the way, every time I see Biggie, I just want to like break out into song. And I'll spare our podcast audience that because I'm a kind human being. But it's. But yeah, it's I wouldn't count Purdue out of the mix. And so, but you're right. Michigan can give Kansas a run for their money just because they shoot the ball so well, and that there's potential there. I will say this: this is just general comment to the CBS and TNT producers. Stop going to the crowd. I don't need to see Julia Louis-Dreyfus after every Northwestern basket. All right, granted, Northwestern's gone, but stop it. All right, I didn't need to see the poor crying kid. I mean, why? Why are you doing this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, and don't cut away from the handshake line. Don't. The handshake lines are so interesting. I don't need to see the crowd cheering. I know the crowd is cheering. I can hear them. No.
Yeah, totally agree. The ads, too. The ads are way too long. I remember tuning into St. Mary's in Arizona for a couple minutes last weekend. I saw one play and 10 minutes of ads. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. Just terrible.
Yeah.
And then... Go ahead.
I was going to say one comment real fast on Purdue to follow up with that. You're totally right about Purdue. Kansas is not going to be able to do whatever they want inside on Purdue. So a Purdue-Michigan rematch is also not out of the question.
Yeah, so that's the game nobody in the country wants to see, huh?
Two Big Ten teams in the Final Four, and Billy Packer and Dick Vitale are going to be furious. America will turn off their TV
set. All right. We're going to wrap it up in the next couple minutes, but can we just say ACC suck it?
ACC has what, one team left, literally?
Yeah. I mean, the best team in the country, best conference in the country, all that sort of stuff. And, look, this whole best conference in the country. Look, ACC was a very good conference, so I'm not knocking it. And at the top end, they're much better than the Big Ten, but I would argue the Big Ten was a much deeper conference, and I think that's come to fruition in the NCAA tournament. The NCAA tournament is sort of a small sample size. A lot of it depends on who you play and when you play them and all that sort of stuff. So it's tough, but a lot of it's an echo chamber, right? Everyone's like, oh, North Carolina's playing Duke. Oh, Louisville's playing this. And they get caught up in the individual matchups. They forget that really good basketball is being played in other parts of the country. So I think a lot of this is just getting caught up in the brand names and not really appreciating the quality of basketball that's on the floor that's being played nationwide.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, it's too much ACC hype. It's like the SEC in football. It's real fast, Satchmo. Who do you think, based on who's left, is going to be the Final Four and the winner?
I like Kansas. I hate to go chalk, but I like Kansas. I have to say, though, my rooting interest is for Gonzaga. Not that I think this particular Gonzaga team is the best Gonzaga team I've seen or anything like that. I just like to see Mark Few break through. I don't know if that's going to happen. But that's what I'm rooting for. Who do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Kansas is the most complete team left. North Carolina is capable, certainly, but UCLA is tough. You're right about Florida. They're sneaky good. I sort of think the Badgers are going to be the last Big Ten team standing. They're going to be in the Final Four, I really believe. I think they've got – I think them getting out of the conference – we were talking about Maryland before, but I think the Badgers getting out of the conference was probably good for them. Gonzaga would be – I'm rooting for Gonzaga a lot because it's time for them to break through.
Yeah.
Them cutting down the nets would be really cool.
Yeah, I think there are two teams in the Big Ten, and Maryland isn't one of them, but I think there are two teams in the Big Ten that really benefit from getting out of conference. And I think Wisconsin is one, and I think Michigan State is the other. Because when those two teams get out of conference into the NCAA tournament, the results are there. And there's a reason for that. I think the conference has more or less figured out how to play Wisconsin and how to play Michigan State, and the rest of the country hasn't. And that's a testament to the coaches, the programs, and the systems they run. And I think Michigan benefits a little bit from it, but not as much as the other, not as much as Michigan State, not as much as Wisconsin.
Yeah, Wisconsin and Greg Gard and then also Tom Izzo for a long time, obviously, they know how to adjust in tournament games, I think, better than, you know, in Big Ten games, you're right. It's not that they don't coach well in Big Ten games, but you kind of slog through the season a little bit. And I think, you know, in a tournament game, I'll take one of those guys with their teams anytime over anybody else.
Yeah, I agree. No, I'm with you on that. And your national champion is Kansas. My national championship is Kansas. Who are you rooting for outside of Kansas?
I mean, if Purdue made some noise, I think I'd have I'd enjoy that. And then, you know, the other team that would be fun to see them kind of go far would be Butler, if they were able to do it. Butler's gotten close a couple times. I don't think they can, but that would be fun if Butler, if it was like a Butler-Gonzaga final, I think that would be, isn't that Bulldogs versus Bulldogs?
Yeah, that would be fun.
Yes, America would
dogs
be there
everywhere
also annoy Billy Packer and anything to annoy Billy Packer and Dick Vitale and all the ACC apologists with those two teams in the final game would be fantastic. I would just love it. I would tape it and watch it over and over again.
Yeah, at this point, nothing would please me more than to see North Carolina lose before the Final Four, not reaching the Final Four. I think that of all the possible outcomes, that would make me happiest.
Team most likely to start a brawl would be South Carolina. They look like they're ready to just get out there and start fighting rather than playing basketball sometimes.
Yeah. And I've got a message to Duke fans who are complaining about the game being in South Carolina and being a virtual home game for South Carolina. Really? How many years have you played in Greensboro?
Change your damn basketball law, North Carolina. Change your damn basketball law. That's why the NCAA won't go to your state anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Change the damn bathroom law. And on top of that, the NCAA is back in South Carolina because they changed the Confederate flag law. You see how this works?
Brilliant.
Oh.
I love it. By the way, South Carolina was gift wrapped that game back to Duke with all those fouls they were committing. I love the coach's face for South Carolina. He was like, "What are you doing?" It was like a sort of an Izzo face. It was like, "What, are you kidding me? Like, wow, you have the lead and you're fouling Duke." It looked like they just wanted to start a rumble.
Well, it's almost like he knows his team is dumber than Raj, because Duke was pressing and every inbound pass went into the corner. I mean, who does that?
A bunch of meatheads out there. It was very funny. It was very funny.
And every time they passed it into the corner so Duke could trap it, you just saw Frank Martin just like age another 5 years with a look on his face that said, "What are you guys doing?"
Yeah, they were getting a little excited in the moment, I think, celebrating before it was over. But they had the crowd behind them in that arena. Yeah, but
tell me if you thought this was weird. I thought Mike Krzyzewski called dogs off early. There were like 30 seconds left in the game, and it was a 2 or 3 possession game. And yeah, South Carolina was making its free throws, but Duke could have extended that game for another 3 or 4 sets of free throws. And just like stopped fouling. I was like, whoa, what happened there?
I think Duke, that's a Duke move. I've seen Duke do that in regular season games in hostile arenas, and I think Krzyzewski felt like he was outnumbered, not only on the floor, but just also the crowd. The crowd looked like they just wanted to, like, tip over the Duke bus and set it on fire, and I kind of think that Krzyzewski was like, you know, we'll just let South Carolina have this one tonight. I've got 5 titles. We're moving on.
It was almost like he had a tea time somewhere. I just don't know. It was just really...
He had a wine tasting to go to. Oh, my God. He was very stoic, too, with all those fouls. I mean, he usually gets, like, all, like, pruny-faced or whatever, and he was kind of just sort of standing there. I really think he was just sort of, like, afraid of the crowd. And frankly, I would be too.
Either that or he got a Botox injection.
He did look like he had a Botox injection. It's funny that you would say that. I was kind of thinking that. Yeah, something was weird about him. Yeah, he was kind of preserved. He looks Dick Clark preserved, kind of.
He's entered
really
the Dick Clark realm.
maybe Coach K is like a... he's one of those. What was Data on Star Trek? He was a. He wasn't a person. He was a. Some sort of hologram. Is that right? Like Data from Star Trek Next Generation? Is Coach K the hologram?
An android. Data was the android. There was in Star Trek Voyager, there was Doctor. The Doctor was the hologram.
Coach K is an android.
Oh, just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. I think we've had enough fun at the ACC's expense.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. Any other final thoughts before the fight song plays us out?
That would be it. Go Spartans. Feeling optimistic about basketball, hockey, and everything else. And we have more podcasts coming up soon with a lot of other stuff coming.
It is spring in Spartan Nation, DB.
Yeah. Yes.
At least until the football program stuff gets settled out. But that's another podcast.
We'll have the Downer podcast. We'll celebrate today. We'll have the Downer podcast coming up. That and the Dr. Nasser thing. That's those are going to be some ugly podcasts, Sashmo. Yeah, I'm going to need a drink when we're doing those podcasts.
Yeah, we'll bring some Jamesons to that.
Fireball. We'll do some fireballs on the air.
Oh. All right, time for the flight song to play us out until we get to the Downer podcast. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.